Yeah, there certainly were lots of mask-wearing slashers during that time.
Well, and this doesn't have the gore that most slashers have. So
I would say that this, now having seen it, it's more palatable than Ernest Saves Halloween.
It's funny that you should mention that.
Welcome, applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
And boy, did you click on it.
Today's movie, Treatings, brought to you by Sean Hall, our resident fact checker's birthday month.
Woo!
Happy April, y'all.
I'm excited to see how well this one performs because probably our most recent like top performer was Haosu. So Sean might be on a roll. He might be getting our good picks in.
It's true.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like it turns out that somebody with like a master's in theatrics would like have the ability to pick out exceptional films that we then pick apart in a way that is very mundane.
All right. So how did y'all come to the film?
We haven't told them what it is yet.
Oh, we haven't told them?
We told them that they knew because they clicked on the thing, but okay. We haven't announced the title.
All right, let me do let's get another. So we're doing Killer Clowns from Outer Space from 1988.
Fantastic.
Did anyone notice that the clown is spelled with a K?
Yes.
Yeah, and I hate it. You've already got the alliteration there. You don't need it. It's fine.
Just one more K, though.
No. No, we don't need that. We don't need that. We don't need that at all.
Do have a C in space. Yeah, I know.
So they do like a spacey in... Okay, wait. We start where we start. I'm just going to... I want to jump into it real fast because I want to yell about it. I mean, thoughtfully critique and praise the things that this film has both... utilized and perhaps not.
Correct.
That's the whole point of the podcast. You know what it is. Yeah. You also saw the title of the podcast, but Lydia's right. How did we get here?
Yeah. So for me, I don't think I've ever heard of this film until Sean had put it up on the text thread and put it up against Cabin Boy with Chris Elliott.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So I will say this. My first impressions of this film are boiled down to three words. Cotton, candy, scrotums.
You're not wrong.
Naomi, was this a totally new experience for you?
Well, I think you mentioned earlier that we'd seen it together just after we'd started dating. So like 20 some odd years ago, mm-hmm. we saw this film together. So, do I remember it? No. Did I probably not like it very much back then? Probably. Because a lot of the stuff from that time period became really formative movies for me because I either really, really liked them or I didn't like them at all. And this one kind of fell in the didn't like it gray area. Like I was like, well, it hits all the things. It's sci-fi, it's horror, it's campy, it's interesting, it's all of these things, but it didn't resound with me. I wasn't like, this is no. And I was talking to Madeline earlier and she was like, you, as opposed to Sean, who is like a true camp stan, right? I like camp, but a lot of the stuff that I really like hits like borderline mainstream. It generally has a larger budget. It's generally been widely released. It just didn't make its money, you know? So this one kind of hits that, like, it really does, like, between the chasm between me and Sean, which is like, I mean, we shake hands over it all the time, but the small chasm that does exist between all human beings, making us different human beings, this movie lands in it for us, I think. But I think that having watched it and now reviewing it with you guys, it has elevated it. Like, I certainly don't think I feel the same way I did 20 years ago as I do now. Because we'll get to my shocked and applauds in like 4 weeks. Thanks, applauders. Jen, how about you?
Well, I certainly didn't see it first on video. I think that it might have been like an HBO Showtime kind of deal. And I saw it definitely with my older brother, Jared, first, but I don't remember how old we were. I remember feeling like I wasn't old enough to watch this movie because I thought it was going to be like a slasher kind of deal. And it didn't like give me nightmares or anything. It's not like a terribly scary movie, but that's my thing. That was my first. It was probably kind of a late night Saturday deal. And then, like you said, we saw it. It was at George's old house. And I don't remember. I think I probably went to Hollywood Video when I saw it. I'm like, I haven't seen this in years. And we ended up watching it together.
Yeah. I was squarely going to blame Sean for that. All right. That was your problem. No, it's fine. It's wonderful. I loved watching, like, binge watching, like, movies and TV shows with you. It's what bonded us like a million years ago. So
do we have any Sean back?
Yes, we certainly do. Thank you, Sean, for picking this film, because you obviously have some really great things to bring to the discussion, even more than just the movie selection. And right up at the top, we have a reference to another movie that we have reviewed.
Oh, no.
Is it Night of the Living Dead?
It is not Night of the Living Dead.
It is not. Oh, I'm the one clipping now.
Okay. Well, let's see.
No, it's. Yeah.
Is it referencing Rocky Horror Picture Show?
We didn't do Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, sorry. But we will someday. Probably.
Phantom of the Paradise. What you were thinking?
No, I totally spaced on the fact that it was a movie we had done. I was trying to think of a movie that gives me a little bit of the same vibes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll just go out and say it. Okay. The writers, directors, and producers are the Chiodo brothers. We're going to say Chiodo.
It looks like
Chiodo.
Yeah.
Stephen, Charles, and Edward were also responsible for the mouse dioramas in Dinner for Schmucks.
What?
That is amazing. That's one of our best episodes.
And the scene that actually did give me nightmares as a child, the large Marge claymation effects for Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Same girl, same. I hated Large Marge. That was the worst part of the whole movie. Well, no, that and him turning into the mantis thing. But yeah, bad.
Yeah, for sure. But it's kind of interesting that, like, I mean, I wouldn't think of them doing this movie based on the Dinner for Schmucks and Large Marge scenes. Seems like they would have brought a lot more to the table, but it is a campy movie. So we had kind of discussed early watching it that it felt like sort of a sitcom. It's staged like a sitcom.
Yeah, you got a lot of close-up shots and a lot of, like, intimate face shots. You don't have a lot of broad sweeping views. It's certainly not like an epic.
Yeah, that's also when you have like faraway shots and then something important happens and you get up close, it's an easy way to kind of fake the special effects. So you're not having to put as much into like making the special effects look good from far away. The close up nature of it kind of makes it like, I mean, Jen, you had mentioned this, that it looks like they have different masks for the clowns when they're close up versus far away. So
yeah, and they dedicate a ton of time to reaction shots. Like that, like if you take out, okay, and you know what I love when I do, I know you love when I do this, but like when if you took out all the reaction shots of somebody being like, like if you took out all the reaction shots, this movie would be 3.5 minutes long.
All right, more Sean facts here. The film's original title was just simply Killer Clowns, but the filmmakers added the words From Outer Space to prevent audiences from assuming the film was a slasher movie.
That's good. I think that probably served the film well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there certainly were lots of mask-wearing slashers during that time.
Well, and this doesn't have the gore that most slashers have. So
I would say that this, now having seen it, it's more palatable than Ernest Saves Halloween.
It's funny that you should mention that. I was going to keep this for later, but...
I'm such a genius that I had to bring it in now.
Yeah.
You know you're a genius if you tell people that you are.
Repeatedly, over and over again.
All the time. I'm so smart, guys. Okay, cut that. No, leave that in. That's all good.
two of the masks that were used to create the clowns in the film were repurposed and used to portray trolls in the 1991 film Ernest Scared Stupid.
Okay, yeah, Sean's screaming at the fact that I said that wrong. Yeah, but yeah, true.
It's just that we've had this discussion on this podcast.
I know,
before.
I have a mental disorder.
He does save Christmas.
He does save Christmas, and he saves summer camp, and he goes to jail. He's a felon.
Was it Scared Straight?
No.
Ernest Scared Straight?
I don't know. I have no idea. I apparently cannot get the titles of his films right. I don't think I should be a reference. Scared Stupid. I bought the DVD, Lydia.
You bought it for, I remember this story. It was for the applauders. This is a callback to our Night of the Living Dead when Naomi showed Night of the Living Dead to her youth group.
Uh-huh.
And then she showed
Ernest Scared Stupid.
Ernest Scared Stupid. And they were more scared of Ernest Scared Stupid than they were of Night of the Living Dead. Which, I mean,
it hurts to this day.
But it's like, I get why they were. Like, I remember Ernest Scared Stupid. That terrified me. Mm-hmm. And it was because of these masks that they were wearing, the same ones that are in this movie.
Yeah.
So
that's good. That's
bring
solid.
Us back to the movie, yeah. So we don't go on too many tangents.
I'm with you.
There is a porn parody.
Of course there is.
Cheese and crackers, guys.
It was filmed in 2015 called...
No!
2015.
7 years ago?
Just seven years ago.
7 years ago. 7 years ago, somebody's like, man, having Barack Obama as the president's really great. I think...
So this is the reason everything has gone downhill.
I think what will prevent a global pandemic is if we create a hip porno parody of Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Definitely.
What's it called?
I don't even think that this is the best name for it.
I'll give you a better name. You have to tell me what it is first.
Killer Cleavage from Outer Space.
Boo.
I would probably say something stupid like Killer Cum Shots from Outer Space.
That's a good one.
That's a better one.
Yeah.
Especially since it goes along with all of the different kinds of guns they use.
Cleavage is also spelled with a K.
Right off, you guys. Also, I fully approve. I only approve because it goes with this movie and that terrible... Why do people... Okay, it really is what Krusty the Clown says on The Simpsons. K is the funniest letter. Except I don't agree. It's obviously like J. Or like W.
Yeah, I think Z is a pretty funny out there.
Z is perfectly hilarious, but don't think K is. K is like the Kmart of letters.
All right, it's time to play our favorite game. Guess that box office.
Okay, so I did see the budget.
Okay.
So I have to abstain from that.
All right. Well, budget, I usually tell you anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, I would say the budget was... In 1988, I'm going to say like $15 million.
Wow.
That's probably really high.
Yeah.
I went over in Price is Right Rules, but we're not doing Price is Right Rules.
No, we Price is Right Rules the box office.
Okay. Really? I don't think we ever did
there are
Price
no standard
right.
rules in
I'm
what we do,
sure
Lydia.
We don't do the Price is Right Rules.
Oh, that's whoever's closest.
This is a mirror mask budget, basically. It's a $2
million
budget.
Wow. $1.8 million.
Yeah.
Well, Sean says two.
Well, Google says 1.8, and I couldn't. I was trying to look at the cast or where I could find it online, and I was like, oh, damn. I saw the budget. But I have no idea how much it made, so it'll be a solid guess from me.
Little intermediary Sean fact, the $2 million budget was primarily on production costs. The clowns and visual effects were created almost entirely by the filmmakers at very little cost. So, box office, what do we all think it is?
We're still kind of in drive-in era, but certainly into like Friday night, Saturday night, date night slasher type. But mm-hmm. I say slasher, but obviously, so this is not, despite the title. I'm going to say it made its money. I'm going to say that it probably made three-ish times its money. I'm going to say 5.5.
Okay.
5.5 million.
I'm going to stick with my first number and say 15 million. Just, you know, for no reason.
Lydia wins.
What? How much was it?
What do I win?
A congratulations and a pat on the back.
How much was it?
$43 million.
Are you kidding?
In 1988 money.
okay, so we need to get like $2 million together. I don't know how we're gonna do that, but we'll get $2 million together. We'll do like a movie that is like zombie. It's like a zombie horror campy thing, and then we'll just like put it out there, and hopefully we'll like mimic a lot of the things in there, because apparently people really responded to both Mike and Dave and Debbie. And I'm like, why? I don't know.
I don't think they responded to Mike and Dave and Debbie, whose names I will from this moment on forget.
Okay. So do you think that they responded to the clowns?
Yeah.
You think it was the clowns?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're just going to have like rubber mass of different zombies.
It is certainly a creature feature that is what's the draw of this film. There's okay. like, I mean, like you can't be like, oh yes, remember that soliloquy that cop number two said?
It was a soliloquy?
No, there wasn't. That's why I'm saying it's about the monsters. There was nothing.
Okay.
There was nothing to ring out of this other than that. I mean, like, solid acting.
Oh, yeah.
But was it Shakespeare?
No. Yeah, it was the monsters. We're going to have to really, like, pump up our zombie makeup. Mm-hmm. That, like, figure out what a really good blood is. Yeah. Oh,
there's lots of tutorials online.
Yeah.
You can always buy pig's blood.
Mm-hmm. We'll just buy like a plot of land and we'll just get really good equipment and write a script that is just
obviously 20, the script is secondary, Lydia.
20% characters, 80% monsters. Because that was kind of like something that they did, is show them the clowns doing different things in the town and showing how they're taking it over.
Yes, so, I like that.
Mm-hmm. It was easy. It was an easy plot to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Well, mostly this is going to be in scene or stuff that I finish off with. But I did want to say that, because we're heading right in there, that the title song Killer Clowns was written and produced by the American punk rock band The Dickies.
Yeah. Do I know them from anything else?
No, but I hear they're a bunch of dicks. That's all.
A dickie is a tiny shirt that you wear under another shirt to make it look like you're wearing more shirts.
It's not an ascot, though.
No, obviously not.
That's all I've got. You want me to look them up?
No, Murphy Brown wears a dickie, and freaking, what's his face? Freddy from Scooby-Doo wears an ascot.
Ascots are the white collar things.
Nope, it's the fluffy scarf that's around his neck that he tucks in his shirt.
Oh, okay.
I got another song from the Dickies if we want to hear just like the first couple of moments. That is their cover of the Banana Splits theme song. Do you guys ever?
I was never a Banana Splitser. I know them, but I don't. It was the 70s. It was pre-us, and it was like big mascot-y type animals, like walking around being like a fever 70s nightmare dream.
So it's kind of like Yo Gabba Gabba, but for the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a guy with the live action little boy. I mean, it was all live action, but they were mascots and like one little kid. Mm-hmm. He had like a pan flute.
Didn't they like translate into cartoon sometime?
Yeah, there was a they turned into cartoons too.
Okay.
But it was like lots of burnt orange and like big fluffy daisy shapes. It was very uncomfortable.
All right, that's what I've got.
Opening credits in space.
Accurate. I like the blue titles on the black space. I feel like that was easier for my eyeballs to read. That doesn't really go anywhere but that. So you see a bunch of title cards, but then but you see a bunch of names, and they don't really matter. You get to like the riff of the top riff of the song, and then it says Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you got the theme song going.
Yes. Which is kind of nice. I like the creepy clown vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Later on in the song, you do hear... later on, when the song's being played in the ending credits, you do hear the general circus theme of do 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 do.
Sean says the traditional circus theme is actually a military march entitled "Entrance of the Gladiators" by Czech composer Julius. I want to say it's Fukik. F U C with an accent, I with an accent, K.
I am Russell Crowe. Do 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 do.
That is hilarious.
dumb.
But in this movie, they make it sound cooler than that because they're doing it on a guitar, and it's an electric guitar. Uh-huh. So it goes.
It's edgy. It's good.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I cannot find a lot of fault with the theme song.
If I were going to be a gladiator and I could choose my theme song, it would be March of the Gladiators, but on electric guitar.
I would want Baby Elephant Walk, but then like just completely decimate. Just because you'd want that level of like embarrassment before that utter annihilation.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to go ahead and come in and everybody thinks that, oh, you're going to be easy to beat. And then you just annihilate them.
Bum, 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 whoosh, whoosh, blood rain. Just, you know.
This is our future anime.
Like Caesar goes to like turn his thumb up or down and I just cut it off and I'm just like.
Oh, that's the song that we will have. We'll have like a heavy metal cover of Baby Elephant Walk in our zombie.
Heck yeah. That way we're not stealing from this film.
Right.
We're making it our own.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I like how we're rewriting this as we go.
Yeah. Okay.
Zombies, Baby Elephant Walk.
Yeah.
Electric guitar.
Yeah.
Okay. In space.
Okay, so this is also not just the opening credits, but it's the theme song to the movie. And this song is called Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which gives me like Earth Girls Are Easy vibes because it has a theme song.
Yeah, we've had several movies with theme songs.
Never Ending Story.
Earth Girls Are Easy, Little Shop of Horrors, this one. Probably other ones. I don't know if Brave Little Toaster had one, though. But others, probably. You guys, it's been like 3 years or more. Like almost like four?
It'll be...
Four this summer, right?
Technically four, yeah. We did have, you know, like a good 6 months or so, maybe 8 months off.
Yeah, but considering life in general, that's like not much of a hiatus for us, for anyone.
We've been pretty consistent since then, so.
I think this is episode 36. I'm going to look that up.
So we come down to Earth, any town, America.
Well, isn't this called Crescent Cove?
It is Crescent Cove. So, but we never see like water. No, we do see water. We do see water.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're thinking coastal town, maybe. But like, it's so funny because parts of it feel like it's in the mountains and then parts of it feel like it literally is on the coast of something.
Right. Well, I mean, in the Great Lakes. You get like the same kind of coastal, like you can get terrain that looks like it's on the shore of like an ocean.
Yeah.
But you do also get the but you also have the mountainous. Well, maybe not.
The sound can be a bit like that too.
Maybe it takes place in the Puget Sound. It
takes place in Forks, Washington.
Yeah.
You get it, Jen? Okay,
I mean,
he looked at me like so pained.
It kind of works with some of the other elements of this movie. So, yeah, it takes place in Forks, Washington.
Yeah.
A young lady is stuck in a love quadrangle between
the man she loves, the man she loved, and the animals that want to eat her.
The animals that want to eat her are the killer clowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I was with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Solid reference.
Goody.
We're outside of a soda shop. It's very bustling. It's a Friday night.
Yeah, it's like a burger shop, but it says Big Top Burger. This is like as the theme song's going, we're seeing little bits of the town. And you see this guy holding a couple of grocery bags and he's balancing this beer can as he's walking. And
well, yeah, we see that kid. But I mean, well, we see the cop come out of the burger shop and he's got a cup of coffee. And I wrote down beleaguered cop because that's a trope that we see everywhere.
I wrote dick cop is a dick.
I hadn't got to that part.
Yeah.
So when I wrote this part of my notes. But
I just assumed because of the way that he was like, you know, looking all grumbly and everything.
I gave him the benefit. I give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
I'm glad.
Don't worry. Later on in my notes, I say nothing nice about this man.
I judge everybody within 5 seconds of meeting them.
That's probably healthier. You have better boundaries than I do. So he's like coming out to the car and he's like, and then as he's driving this, he gets passed by a guy drinking a beer and he's just like, and shakes his head. So you kind of know.
Friday nights.
Yeah. The guy's drinking a beer that says like beer on it. I love no name brands on like on foodstuffs in movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's great. Then we cut to Makeout Point, which is called the top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that.
Yes.
So much.
Also, like, the makeout music sounds like elevator makeout music.
I don't remember what the music was in this part. I was, because it's immediately like you see different people make it out, and then immediately the ice cream truck comes in with mm-hmm. like this big glowing ice cream clown on the top. And
Naomi, would you say it's Chekhov's ice cream truck?
Yes, I would.
Also, they have the worst ice cream ad ever.
Yeah, I didn't. Did you write it down?
I wrote it down.
Oh, good, because I did not decide to commit that to memory.
I don't want to like give it too much credit. I'm just gonna say some very choice phrases.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these are what make it the worst ad ever. We'll give you the stick. You give it a lick.
No thanks. Ugh. No thanks.
A tasty treat for while you screw. Yeah, that was at the end. And I'm just like, gross. Just no. Have you, like, I think we've talked about this, but sex and food should stay separate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's messy.
Yeah. Then you have to wash your bedding.
I don't like mixing sex and food. It's gross and sticky and it gets everywhere.
Yeah, that's why dinner is a separate event from the bedroom.
Yes.
Like,
after they come through, you know, everybody's just really like, everybody who's making out does not want to be interrupted with an ice cream ad at this point.
Chucking beer cans at the truck.
So my next note is the movie is becoming self-aware.
Okay. So like, so they pull up the, you see Doof and Dork
mm-hmm.
brothers pull up to make out point. They get pelted with beer cans, and then like two girls emerge from the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then so they're bigger, but they're not giant or anything like that, but they're super fat by 80 standards, which makes me super mad.
Right. And they're eating ice cream. They're eating popsicles.
Yes. And how dare you see a larger woman eating food?
Okay. So
unapologetically and not willing to give it up.
Right. Here's the thing. Like, I don't feel like the movie's being derogatory towards them.
Oh, I do.
Really?
Yeah. Fuck you, movie.
Because nobody like is specifically talking about their size. It's definitely like they're not going to put out.
Yeah.
They only wanted to hang out with these guys to eat some ice cream.
Yeah. One of them says, you said we could eat as much as you want, and nobody said anything about making out.
Right.
That's in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
They fuck it up later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right. I trust you. I trust you fully.
No, I'm mad about it.
Okay.
Because you have every right to say no. Anything except an enthusiastic yes is a no.
Right.
So, like this movie doesn't play well with that. And we've had way too many if you want to hear me rant about consent, feel free to listen to Joe versus Volcano.
Mm-hmm.
Because we deserve better than not quite rapey.
Right. That's like bottom of the barrel. That's like, you know.
That's under the barrel.
Yeah.
That's under the layer of dirt that's wet under the barrel where the worms are. It's below that.
Okay.
It's gross.
Anyways, we then pan to two of the main characters, Mike and Debbie. And Mike's just like, oh, those are the creepy brothers. They were my friends in high school. And I'm like, Mike, I think this is a red flag. This should be a sign for you about who you're keeping as your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes, the ice cream truck has left. We should say it.
After they're completely like booed out of makeout point.
Yes. And our main couple is in the back of a truck, we assume, and they're making out in a inflatable dinghy and looking up at the stars, but you also see that it's a covered cab, so like how are they looking up at the stars?
Yeah, it's hard to gauge if it's like a hatchback or if it's a covered pickup truck. But either way, it's going to be difficult for them to look up at the stars.
You'd have to literally be hanging out of the truck to mm-hmm. see up in the sky.
Right.
But here's my real problem is that, have you ever been in a rubber dinghy? Like a little lifeboat-looking blow-up pool toy-looking thing?
No, but I have been on a inflatable bed, and those are like super cumbersome.
Yes, but also, now, mind you, they're just in this boat. The smell of plastic and like the type of rubber, like it would be a terrible, terrible makeout location. Like, if you get sweaty, it'd be all sticky and like icky. And then like, what if it has grit in it from when you were at the lake or whatever? Mm-mm. I would give that a 2 out of 57 big wet clown kiss smooch marks.
All right.
It's gross.
Okay.
So then they see a shooting star. Is it though?
No, it's not. But Debbie's like, oh, we should totally go see that. And Mike's like, that's like 1,000 miles away. And she's just like, no, it isn't. And he's just like, okay. And so they go on this trek for a shooting star. But after the scene cuts away from them, we see the shooting star blaze across the porch of an old guy and his bloodhound just sleeping outside because it's probably like a warm night.
He was drinking on his porch.
He was drinking on his porch.
He had like a bunch of bottles.
Okay, I didn't see that.
That was okay.
I'm glad you did. It makes sense. And he's like all, you know, horn swoggled and, you know, what was that phrase from Blazing Saddles? I'm going to try and look
a moron?
For it. No. No.
Salt of the earth.
No, it was, this man has authentic frontier gibberish.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's very Blazing Saddles of you. Yes, absolutely.
Because he sounds a lot like Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, he's got overalls, long johns, the hound dog. He runs into the house to get his going to go dig that thing that fell out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
He has a shovel and a pail, which he's carrying over his shoulder like a bindle staff.
Right. He's essentially going out to look for this meteorite so that way he can claim ownership. And he was talking about like, oh, all these people are going to come see and they're going to have hot dogs and popcorn and tacos.
Yes. I thought that was pretty cute.
It was cute.
But short lived because he walks out into the woods. He's headed towards the direction our heroes are headed. Right. Mm-hmm. And he, instead of finding a burning hole in the ground, he finds
a circus tent that's glowing.
And he's all like, we doggies, or whatever.
But like, oh, the circus is in town. Maybe we can get free passes.
Yeah.
Which, no, if you come across a random circus tent in the middle of nowhere, they're selling drugs.
Oh, at one point, back at Girl and Boy.
Oh, yeah, they, like,
the dude was like, well, what about us and our champagne? And she's like, bring it with us. And I was like, great.
Yeah.
We are like 3 minutes into this movie and they're drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm 100% about Cletus or whatever his name's hound dog.
Mm-hmm.
Good old boy.
Pooh Bear.
Yeah, his name is Pooh Bear.
That hound dog's name is Pooh Bear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people who know, they know.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't, then that's okay.
My grandpa had a dog named Pooh Bear. It was widely regarded to be the smartest dog in existence.
Yeah.
Though none of us met him and that's fine.
He got behind a wheel once.
And sat there. He growled at somebody who got near Dick Grandpa's truck. And he was like, oh, yes. Magnificent protector, Pooh Bear.
Okay, now everybody knows.
Good.
You know, I'm glad.
I like everybody inside my jokes.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, nope. That's an alternate title for the porn parody.
Just inside jokes?
Everyone's inside my jokes.
So old man goes up to the circus. He's looking for someone and he can't find any. And then we see the dog kind of lagging behind. And then a circle comes out of the tent.
Yeah, there's a shadow in the shape of a clown.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought it was a pretty cool effect. Them opening a hole, mm-hmm. like a portcullis in the side of a tent.
Mm-hmm.
And then Annette comes out and just snags the dog.
We don't actually see that, but it's heavily implied that
he goes in a net.
Right. Oh, he does get put into the net. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
But that's where Madeline stopped watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I assume.
Yeah.
Because nothing should happen to dogs in a film.
They should all live
mm-hmm.
to a nice old age.
Yeah.
And the old man comes over and he's looking for his dog. And all he sees, this dog was wearing a, what was it? Like a...
It's a bandana.
A bandana, thank you. And that's the only thing that's left on the floor. And then the old man's freaking out, like, where'd you take my dog? Give me back my dog. I'll get you.
He turns and then he sees a giant animatronic. Well, to us, animatronic, but a giant clown is standing behind him. I believe the clown is listed in my notes. And y'all are going to have so much fun with all these names. I'll list them all at the end. If I remember which clown is in which scene. I tried really hard to make notes of which clown was doing what, when.
Mm-hmm.
But y'all, there are so many clowns. I believe this is yellow pink mohawk guy. Clown.
Okay.
Yellow pink mohawk clown.
All I saw was just disturbing faces of clowns And
they're so fleshy and big.
And they got all these like wrinkles and like, you know,
blubberiness. Yeah. And like their ears are animated. So like they so they wiggle a little bit when they express.
Their faces are literally twice the size of a human's face.
Yeah, it's legitimately off-putting. Like right. you don't look at this and think, like, there's no chance anyone looked at this and thought, ah, fun. It's the kind of disproportion that people add to characters to make them upsetting. And it's hard because, like, there are people who have these ish proportions, but we're talking about, like, broader, like, huge foreheads, long hanging jowls or wide jowls, like, that spread into the neck, overgrown ears and nose. So they look much older because your cartilage grows after you, or it actually hangs lower the older you get. So your nose is bigger and protruding in your ears. And so you've got this makeup that is blotchy and scary, and these colors that are just a little too dark or a little too off, you know, like the bright hair, but like a purple lip doesn't look right with it. Like, it's not Uncanny Valley. It's very believable. I could see why someone who was very young seeing it would like just bleh.
Right. Well, these are for anybody out there who has seen Ernest Scared Stupid. These are very similar to the way that those trolls look. Mm-hmm. And so they very exaggerated. They don't look fun. They don't look like friendly at all. And it kind of adds to that like terror factor that they were trying to go for.
Their hands look like sausages with like the tiniest fingernails in them. They look swollen.
Did you count how many fingers they had?
No.
Yeah, they had they did that thing where they got like three top fingers and a thumb. Yeah. They got animation hands.
I don't like that. I did not notice that.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Then do we also see the old guy get like silly stringed in pink animation at this point? Do we see that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, I'm going to say that we do because it's something that pops up a lot. So essentially, ominous circus tent is ominous. Also, old man is giving it his all. Like, I love this actor.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah, so enjoyable.
I would say, and I'll bring it up again when our heroes get there, but I think what they might have been aiming for, or what might have served the film better, was kind of a Stephen King vibe, like an eeriness about the tent that doesn't really show up until you get the reveal of the clown.
Interesting. I mean, interesting that you bring up Stephen King, because this movie comes out 2 years after Stephen King's It, the novel about a scary, creepy clown.
Yeah. And I think Pennywise, especially Tim Curry's Pennywise, had to have, you know,
inspired
this,
it.
Yeah. Well, along the same lines. I mean, he has a big, broad forehead, which is called the reverse, like where you're bald on top and you've got the circle of hair around the back.
Yeah, I did look that up. Halo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, I wrote it down. I'll yell about it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, the halo type hair but like long and off-puttingly straggly red hair, and he's got the white makeup, but you feel like if you wiped it, it would be like gray or something underneath. Like, it's just it's not uncanny, it's just
unnerving.
It's very other, and you're like, oh no. Mm-hmm. That's not quite right.
Yeah.
P.S. Seeing Tim Curry smoke a cigarette in it's like outfit is hilarious. He's just like hanging out, and he's like, this fucking sucks. And you just see him puffing away. Hilarious. Oh my gosh. Okay, so now we cut back to the police station. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, we're at the police station.
What's his name? Manali.
Mooney.
Okay, so Mooney, moody cop.
Moody cop is named Mooney.
I got 5 years to retirement. Not mad. We don't know, but like, right. He's just a jerk.
He brings in two kids that I labeled as punk rockers, but you labeled them as goth.
I labeled them as gay-coded goth babies. Yeah.
So like, part of this scene is Mooney brings in these two, you know, like obviously like social outcast, you know, punk goth rockers, he gives some sort of, you know, ridiculous reason as to why he needs to bring them in. We also see another cop by the name of Dave. He's younger. He's got like blonde tips and everything. And Mooney's like, oh, I caught these two over at the park and with a bottle of wine and everything.
Well, we were walking back. Well, he was like, they were drinking in public. And they're like, we had a bottle of wine. We were walking back home. We live here. We're allowed to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
And but so one of the things that they say is, not just like, we're allowed to, you know, this is, we go to school here, you know, this is our town too. It's also something that Mooney says where he's like, you're the reason why this country is going downhill. And it gives, like, as people who have heard those kind of talking points from, you know, homophobes, it was like, oh, these two are just like hanging out, drinking a bottle of wine. And they just wanted to, you know, kind of exist in public, and they couldn't.
Because they had eyeliner on and their hair was a bit too long and they were wearing dark clothes.
Because they didn't look heteronormative.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, later on, I'm not going to point it out. I might point it out. But later on, you actually, Mooney says that, oh, I was up over at the Top of the World just recently. And this is like after the scene. So he's like, so we know that they were in that area.
Yeah.
Probably going up to do, you know, what all of the other heterosexual couples were doing with open things of, you know, like the main characters literally had champagne,
yeah,
which is another form of wine.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of sinks in the more you watch it, like, oh, these characters are definitely gay coded and they are being put into jail because of the fact that they're just existing in a world with bigots.
Yes. And good cop starts bickering with bad cop. And I think that's bad practice in front of suspects you have under under arrest. They lock them up. So.
Right. Dave's like, look, if you're going to, you know, Mooney technically has evidence as to why they need to be locked up. But Dave is like, he doesn't fight Mooney on it, even though Mooney is very much like using his power to kind of lord it over people he doesn't like. He's already othered.
Yes. Mooney has seniority, I think. And Dave is just a good cop. Mm-hmm. And the chief is out of town until Monday. So they're kind of like having to, you know, do a whole town's worth of duty,
right,
on their own. We cut back to our hero couple who are like, they get to where they cannot drive their truck anymore, and so they have to get out and walk. And
now the lady's like, I don't know if this is safe. Maybe we should go back, even though she was the one who just like was like, we should go out there and have an adventure.
Well, before that, exactly.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll power through it because we talk a lot about bad. We talk about bad. He jumps up on a stump and does a impersonation of an indigenous American person, and he's just like, I don't even want to imitate it. He's just like, oh, we have to go this way, with some deep tonal voice that like has the pacing of some stereotype that doesn't seem to be true anywhere that I've seen with actual indigenous people who aren't making fun of that exact thing. And then you think she'd be like, well, you're a dipshit and you need to stop. But she's just like, hey, chief, whatever. Chief long-winded, I think she might call it.
Chief running your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, hey, Debbie. Hey, Debbie.
You don't have to sink.
Debbie.
You don't have to sink.
Debbie.
Yeah.
How is this guy appealing?
He's not. He's literally not. nope. Not at all. Not on any level. Not from his Bill Cosby sweater to his Danny Tanner haircut. It is not good anywhere. Nowhere. It's none of it's good. I can't believe she made out with him. He smelled like plastic and cheap fizzy wine. So like, no, thanks though. But some in here. And we will leave this here because we've had much longer discussions about and much deeper discussions about how like marginalized people are just like shat upon constantly. But we can take a moment to white check ourselves and say, if someone's being racist around you and you don't correct them, you're being racist too.
Or you could at least, you know, even if you don't feel qualified to, you know, come in and debate them in public, because sometimes that's not going to work.
Yeah.
You can always just look at the person who's being marginalized and be like, hey, how are you doing? And you can kind of just like, so there's something that happens with women in like public areas. If they feel like a man is kind of just following them or being like a little bit stalkery, like they will like, I hear stories of women just kind of going over to another woman being like, hey, it's been forever since I've seen you, because a stalker is going to be less likely to, or a guy's going to be less likely to be creepy if there are two women around.
That's true. That's true. I do believe in stepping in for each other. I do also think that like that you don't have to fully engage in order to correct a situation is what I think I was getting to. Like, way to be sensitive. You don't have to fully engage. Somebody makes some sort of like this vocal imitation of a stereotype, being like, way to be sensitive, guy. And then walking away from the conversation gives that person a chance to like be like, oh, this person isn't agreeing with me. Because sometimes, and I've fucking done it, which is what makes me mad. Silence makes certain people think you agree with them.
Right. And sometimes all you have to do is say, shut the fuck up, nobody cares, to a bigot.
Yeah, that is not often an option for me, right. I think, in more delicate situations. But being like, I don't personally agree with what you said might be a more appropriate like business interaction. You know, you're right. Your mouth is writing checks your ass can't cash might be something I'd say to a friend. But like, I think if people are alerted to their ignorance, they have at least an opportunity to like
back off.
Yeah. And recognize maybe they should check it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. So that's the end of that. Other specifically, hey, there's that's one reference to people of color, and then there's only one other black person in this entire movie, and then it's whitewashed all the way down.
Yeah.
And we've talked way more about that on other episodes, so we're not going to get into it because I know y'all's ears are bleeding
right.
editing this right now, but like, we're aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back to the movie.
Yes.
The
now we're going to get to the part where she's like, I don't like this. We should go, which is very Stephen King like feels.
Right. But she says that when they come to the actual tent.
Yes. And I'm like, girl, believe your gut. Don't let an excited man convince you.
You went on a trek to uh-huh. find something that you thought was going to be safe, and then you come across, again, it's a tent in the middle of nowhere. You were allowed to turn around and run.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what I would do.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Instead, they walk on until they mm-hmm. find an entrance, and then they go inside.
Yeah. And then Mike is, you know, again, completely unappealing with stupid jokes about,
hey, isn't this a funny place? I'm going to make jokes about being in a
half man, half woman, or having a toothless elephant, or a binge and purge joke.
Yeah. Yeah. He manages to offend.
Exhausting.
He's just such a garbage human being. I mean, I get, okay, there's a fantastic counterpoint about cringe, and I recommend everybody watch it. He is cringe in a way I do not find palatable. Is it a cancelable level of cringe? Doubt. But like, it is gross, and it does not speak well of his character, and there are other better characters other places, not this guy. But I will say that assuming this place is Cirque du Soleil is actually the smartest thing he does, maybe in the entire film. And it probably isn't that far off. And she's just like, I want to get out of here. And he's like, well, let's just walk all the way to these doors and then go through the doors and then continue to walk, because he's a dipshit. Or at least he's trying to manipulate her into doing something she has expressly said she doesn't want to do.
And she was on board. She was the one who initiated it at first. But then, and he didn't want to.
Yeah, but that's the thing about consent. You can revoke it at any time.
Right.
You can say, I wanted that for a time and I do not want it now.
Could you make the argument that she needed to recognize that he wasn't consenting in the very beginning?
I mean, coercion is not great. If someone says no 100 times and then says yes once, that's not enthusiasm for me.
Yeah. Mike was not really interested in the beginning because he had other things on his mind.
Because he wanted to bang, mm-hmm. right? So what if she didn't want to bang? And so, like, when she saw the thing, she was like, well, that's my opportunity to not have to bang. Like, there are layers here that we don't know.
So Debbie, so this is just, like, us projecting.
Yeah, 100%.
Debbie is, like, maybe, you know, this is her, like, second or third date with Mike. And he's like, oh, we should go over to, you know, Top of the World. And she's like, well, I know what happens in Top of the World. And so she's like, but she feels like, you know, kind of like maybe she owes it to him, which is something that totally exists in society.
And then she gets up there and she thinks you're just gonna make out, but then he whips out the alcohol.
And then she's like, I don't know about this. But she's trying to play it up nice because
this is so much projection. We don't
so
know.
Much projection. But, you know, so talking about YouTubers, uh-huh. there's a YouTuber called CJ the X, and they do this video about how No Face is an incel. And there's a part at the very beginning where they say that a woman cannot be nice to a man because a man might interpret basic kindness as an invitation to have sex. Mm-hmm. And then when that woman turns down that man's sudden sexual advances, the man can become scary and aggressive.
Yep.
And so it's like, they're could be, again, projecting a lot, but like, what if she's just trying to, you know,
divert
and like, oh, this a meteor. Let's go ahead and check that out. And, you know, because she doesn't really want to have sex with him.
Well, she did kiss him. Like, I will say that she's not disinterested. But here's the thing. Enthusiastically participating in a sexual or romantical physical interaction is not necessarily an invitation mm-hmm. for sex. Like there are a ton of ace people who like romantic interaction, maybe as far as kissing and stuff or further. Everybody else has their own flavor, but they have a hard line here. This is where we stop.
Right. Also, this is a movie called Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, maybe we should get back to the clowns.
Maybe
huh?
we should, because they actually go through those doors and one of them takes them to one of those plasma balls, those Tesla balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, this might be a nuclear reactor. This is when they realize that things are going sideways.
Yeah. And they're right in front of what I call a Death Star drop.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, where it goes like straight a shaft down. Is like straight down. Mm-hmm. And then so they back out and then
they go through another door.
Yes.
And this is where we get to the cotton candy scrotum room.
I call it, what in the second version of Willy Wonka bullshit is this?
Yeah.
Smile, applauder. You've reached the end of part one of our review of 1988's Killer Clowns from Outer Space. We hope we've entertained you this week and that you'll have your ticket stubs ready this month for parts 2 and 3. Looking for more entertaining ways to laugh while you scream? Collateral Cinema is celebrating 5 years of episodes and recently discussed the Masters of Horror episode, Imprint. And Flicks X-Rayed has a new episode discussing Jennifer's body. Check out these links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and
that really annoying announcer you have to wade through before the next act.
Jen, are you tired of listening to our peculiar film review show from the nosebleed section? You can get seats so much closer to the hilarity by becoming a $1 per month Patreon applauder. Click the Become an Applauder link at the top of shockedandapplaud.com to learn more. We'll be back in 1 week for part 2 of our review of this ridiculously successful B-movie sci-fi horror. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.